I'm Tracy from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Are you a small business owner or even someone who dreams of entrepreneurship? Then check out season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from iHeart Podcasts and Intuit QuickBooks. Join hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres as they interview entrepreneurs sharing insights around starting and nurturing a small business. You won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too.
Planning your next trip? Choice Hotels' family of 22 brands has over 7,400 locations and the perfect hotel for any traveler you want to be. Like a Cambria Hotel, serving up locally inspired craft cocktails for all my folks who maybe want to meet up and talk about Mad Royals. Check into a Radisson Hotel with flexible workspaces for you strivers who listen during business travel. Or a Comfort Hotel with free hot breakfast, family-friendly pools, and big spacious rooms for the parents who listen with their kids and need a little retreat. What are you waiting for? Join Choice Privileges and start earning points toward your next stay. Find a stay for any you when you book direct at choicehotels.com, where travels come true. What does every grocery store aisle now have in common? Products that come in paper packaging. And not just the obvious ones like cereal boxes and juice cartons. From beauty products to boxed water, there are more opportunities to go papertarian than ever before. So why should you? Because paper comes from a renewable resource and can be recycled up to 7 times. Simply put, it's the smart choice for the environment. And it turns out the easiest choice for you. Learn more at howlifeunfolds.com/papertarian. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Stuff You Missed in History Class from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hello and welcome to the podcast. I'm Dablina Chakraborty.
And I'm Sarah Dowdy.
And we're just gearing up for our long Labor Day weekend, but by the time this episode airs, it will already have passed, and a labor-related memorial should have been unveiled in a town called Ottawa, Illinois. And the memorial, which was unveiled Friday, September 2nd, is a statue of a woman holding flowers in one hand and paintbrushes in the other. And it's meant to symbolize the women who worked for the Ottawa-based Luminous Processes Factory. And there they painted watch and clock dials in the early 20th century. And they were women who ended up getting serious radiation poisoning as a result of their jobs. And I'm not sure how much national media attention this memorial and its unveiling are going to receive. It was conceived of by a young lady named Madeline Piller, who actually came up with this idea for the memorial after doing a junior high history project.
How about that?
Yeah, her dad is a sculptor, and she did this project and kind of couldn't get this woman out of her head and proposed the idea of doing a memorial to them, and they raised all this money, but we're not sure. I haven't seen that many news stories about it. I just randomly kind of stumbled upon it. But the story of the women who came to be known as the Radium Girls actually became a media sensation in the 1920s and the 1930s.
Yeah, they certainly deserve a monument. And it wasn't just an Illinois-based story either, because workers at factories in Connecticut and New Jersey were really in the same boat. In fact, it was a story coming out of New Jersey that first brought this issue, this radium poisoning issue, to the public's attention in the first place. And that's the story that we're going to focus on today in the podcast. And we're going to just sort of take a look at the historical circumstances and working conditions that led to these women getting radiation poisoning in the first place, because you're probably going to wonder pretty quickly how something like this could happen.
Yeah, and we're also going to take a look at how they came to be known as the Radium Girls and their struggle for justice that led to some workplace reforms in the end. So kind of try to put a positive spin on what is ultimately a very sad story. But before we can talk about the Radium Girls, we need to take a closer look at the element that's at the heart of their story, and that is, of course, radium.
Literally, the element. Very good pun, Dablina. So we're going to be talking about radium, of course, but that also gives us the chance to talk about one of our most frequently requested requested podcast subjects, Polish-born scientist and Nobel Prize winner Marie Curie. And this isn't a podcast on her. It's not a profile on her, but she is an important character in it, mostly because she discovered radium in 1898. And radioactivity was still pretty new at that time. It was not well understood. The German physicist Wilhelm Conrad Röntgen had just discovered X-rays back in 1895, and just a few weeks after that discovery, Henri Becquerel had identified radioactivity during experiments with uranium salts. So when Marie Curie made her discovery, all of this stuff was kind of floating around and kind of new science.
Yeah, and people were really fascinated by it, and Curie was one of them. She was really fascinated especially by Becquerel's findings because not that much attention were given to them at the time. So she started experimenting with pitch blend, which is a shiny tar-like byproduct of mining that eventually led she and her husband, Pierre, to isolate two new chemical elements, polonium and the one we're focusing on today, which is radium. It was radioactive. It seemed to pulse with spontaneous energy. And the other cool thing about radium was that it glowed in the dark.
Yeah, that certainly seemed to be a selling point for it, as we'll see. But by this time, people had started to realize that even though radiation was invisible, it did have strong powers. They could cause injury. Scientists were exposed to it in large doses, and they suffered from skin burns and hair loss. So clearly this element could do something. But this also clued physicians into the possibilities that radiation held for treating cancer. Something this powerful could potentially fight something that was hurting people as well as burn them or injure them.
Yeah, so it was that potential and along with those kind of magical glowy properties that it had that gave it this reputation as a wonder substance pretty much from the get-go. People thought it could cure everything from arthritis to diabetes, not just cancer, and an entire radium industry grew out of that belief. Some form of the word radium was actually incorporated into a lot of brand names, whether the products actually contained radium
just
or not,
which
I thought was funny. Yeah. But a lot of products had radium added in them, including toothpaste, hair tonic, bath salts, lotions, heating pads, and male pouches.
You've got to explain what male pouches
Do you know
are.
What a male pouch is, Sarah?
I know now because you told me, but it's your job to tell listeners.
They were condoms. So those also contained radium,
condoms
or some did.
With radium.
But radium or radon-laced water was probably one of the most widely touted products, and it was called liquid sunshine because people thought that this was some sort of magical elixir that could, like, extend your youth and make you healthy. And one brand in particular was called Radithor. You read about this a lot. It was a popular brand of radioactive water, and doctors would give it to patients as a tonic.
It really doesn't sound good, does it?
It doesn't sound good to us now, but maybe it would have back then.
Well,
I don't know.
And you and I were talking about it makes you kind of concerned. What are we drinking or consuming now that will sound as horrible and ridiculous as radium-laced tonic in the future? I mean, gosh.
Yeah, I kind of don't want to know. Maybe I should. But radium's use went beyond just personal and health products, too, right? In 1902, radium was isolated into pure metal, and Marie Curie was involved with that as well. And soon after, American electrical engineer William J. Hammer created a radium-treated paint, which had the trade name Undark, that when applied to things would make them glow in the dark. So this was used on scientific instruments and things like that. It was expensive to do, but it became really significant during World War I, especially when people realized the advantage of applying this to military instruments.
Yeah, you're in a dark trench and you can actually read your watch or read your instrument.
Exactly. So that's where our story about the Radium Girls really begins.
So between 1917 and 1929, hundreds of young women got jobs applying radium-treated paint to watches, to aircraft controls, clocks, and compass faces in factories in states like Illinois and New Jersey, Connecticut, even Long Island. Factories were owned by a big corporation, even though they were in different parts of the country. It was the U.S. Radium Corporation. And for the young women getting these jobs, it seemed like a pretty great opportunity, mostly because it paid a lot better than other factory jobs at the time, more than three times times as much. It was about $18 per week instead of $5 per week. They got paid about a penny and a half per dial they painted, and they would paint about 250 dials a day. So a pretty good job. And the work didn't seem too treacherous either, at least for the time. The women sat together at these long tables with racks of dials, and they would paint the faces sitting next to them and mix up this concoction of glue and water and radium powder into a glowing greenish-white paint, and then use their little camel hair brushes to apply the paint to the dial numbers. So it sounds kind of social, kind of artistic in a way. A pretty nice job.
Yeah, as they were painting these dial numbers, though, after a few strokes, the brushes, those camel hair brushes they were using, would lose their shape, and the women couldn't paint as accurately. So their supervisors had kind of a solution for this. They told them to point the brushes with their lips. And according to an article in the journal American History, some women later quoted their bosses as saying, quote, "Not to worry, if you swallow any radium, it'll make your cheeks rosy." So Grace Fryer was one of 70 young women who started working at a factory like this in Orange, New Jersey in the spring of 1917. Later, about the brushes, she said, quote, "I think I pointed mine with my lips about 6 times to every watch dial. It didn't taste funny. It didn't have any taste. And I didn't know it was harmful."
To add to matters, the workers really had fun with this, licking the brushes with the radium on it. They'd paint their nails and their teeth to sort of amuse each other and surprise their boyfriends when the lights would go out. Fryer even remembers that after she'd blow her nose, her handkerchief would glow in the dark with this radium residue. But they just all have a good laugh about it, go back to work, keep licking those brushes, and keep painting.
Yeah, they didn't have any indication that it was hurting them. In 1920, Fryer quit the factory to take a better job as a bank teller. But only 2 years later, she started having some major problems. Her teeth started falling out, and she developed painful abscesses in her jaw. She got x-rayed, and it showed that she had such severe bone decay. The many doctors and dentists that she went to try to figure out what was going on, they said that they'd never seen anything like it. They'd never seen bone decay to that degree. In July 1925, one doctor finally suggested that her problems might have been caused by her former job as a dial painter.
And I think the delay there is pretty remarkable. So what, it was 1922 when she started having these symptoms. Mm-hmm. It's not till 1925 when somebody says, "This looks like it's radium poisoning." And it turned out that Fryer wasn't the only former dial maker having issues. I guess we can just assume that it took that long for word to spread among the medical community what was going on. But at the request of the Orange City Health Department, the National Consumers League, which was an organization that fought for safe workplaces and reasonable wages and decent working hours, started an investigation on these suspicious deaths of 4 radium factory workers between 1922 in 1924. So right around that time that Fryer is realizing what's wrong with her, other people are realizing something's going on here.
Yeah, the cause of death for these other 4 radium factory workers was listed as things like phosphorus poisoning, mouth ulcers, and syphilis. But the factory workers thought that the paint ingredients did have something to do with it. So New Jersey Consumer League Chairman Catherine Wiley consulted some experts. She brought in a statistician, and she went to Harvard and consulted some people. And she found out when she was talking to people at Harvard that a few years earlier, physiology professor Cecil Drinker had been asked to study the working conditions at U.S. Radium and report back to the company. So somebody had already been looking into this before it even came to their attention. And Drinker found out that pretty much the entire workforce at U.S. Radium was contaminated. They had strange blood conditions, and several workers had advanced radium necrosis. So Drinker made suggestions at that point, and as of June 1924, I think that's when his report came out, and he suggested that they make changes that would protect the workers. But Arthur Roeder, who was president of U.S. Radium at the time, he resisted this, and furthermore, he refused to give Drinker permission to publish his findings, saying that Drinker had agreed to confidentiality and that he wasn't allowed to.
I'm Tracy V. Wilson from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Did you know small businesses make up 99.9% of all businesses in the United States? The world is powered by entrepreneurs, and if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks. And every episode, hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres talk to entrepreneurs about how they've grown from the lessons of launching and nurturing a small business, and how they have found success being their own boss. From the excitement of first starting out to finding the right tools and resources to process invoices and payments like QuickBooks Money, you won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks.
Planning your next trip? Choice Hotels has a stay for any traveler you want to be, with 22 brands and over 7,400 locations. Whether you're a business traveler, a family road tripper, someone who wants to seek out history and maybe make your own, or just planning a quick getaway, Choice Hotels has a stay for any you. Like a Cambria Hotel, where you can be a cocktail connoisseur and sip locally inspired craft beverages at downtown locations in the center of it all. This is a fun way to visit cities with a lot of history and a lot of fun in mind. Or a Radisson Hotel, for all our productivity powerhouses out there. With flexible workspaces and on-site restaurants, you'll get the most out of your work trip. You'll get the coffee, the Wi-Fi, and the work done. And we can't forget about Comfort Hotels. Imagine you're a family road tripper, waking up in your big spacious room and then heading down to a free hot breakfast for the entire family, including waffles. So you'll be well-fed and ready for the day's adventure, even if that's just relaxing. After that, you're spending all afternoon relaxing by the pool. You deserve it. What are you waiting for? Join Choice Privileges and start earning points toward your next stay. Find a stay for any you. Book directly at choicehotels.com, where travels come true. If you use paper, you're a human. But if you choose paper, you're a papertarian, someone who lives a paper-based lifestyle because it has a positive impact on the planet. And also because it's the easiest choice you'll make all day, seriously. It's as easy as reaching for boxed instead of bottled water. It's as easy as opting for beauty products that come in paper packaging. It's as easy as grabbing eggs in a cardboard container. And that's all in one trip to the grocery store, which, if everyone's being honest, you were planning to go to anyway. But paper isn't just an easy choice. Papertarians know that it's the smart choice, too. Because paper comes from trees, a renewable and sustainably managed resource, and paper products are designed to be recycled. In fact, when you choose products that come in paper-based packaging, those fibers can go on to be recycled up to 7 times. So why wouldn't you go papertarian? Learn more at howlifeunfolds.com/papertarian.
Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this, I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter, that's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered for just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black, directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R, under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
So it actually turned out later they found out that Roeder had been circulating a false report under Drinker's name. It was basically his report, but it said, oh, there's no harm here. There's no problem with the radium that's used in the paint. And
why he didn't want Drinker to publish the real report,
exactly.
Obviously.
But to be honest, Drinker's report wasn't the only thing out there that indicated that radium was a hazard. There was also scientific and medical literature, some of it dating back as far as 1906, that contained plenty of information about the hazards of radium. Even one of U.S. Radium's own publications, and that's the part I think is really surprising, it was distributed to hospitals and doctor's offices, and it contained a section with dozens of references. This report was called Radium Dangers-Injurious Effects, and so it was out there. They knew what was going on the entire time.
From the same company encouraging their workers to moisten their brushes.
Yeah, and to be fair, we don't know that the supervisors on the floor actually knew that there were dangers, but
it became pretty clear the company as a whole did, though.
Yes.
So the Consumer League's Wiley tried to get U.S. Radium to pay for the medical expenses for Fryer and for the other workers who were ill, but the company insisted that Radium was not to blame. And it went beyond that, though, and launched this campaign of misinformation. They tried to tarnish the women workers' reputations by saying that the problem wasn't radium, it was actually that they had syphilis. And in 1925, when Fryer started exploring radium as a cause for her illness, a Columbia University doctor named Frederick Flynn, who said that he was referred to her by friends, asked to examine her, and he found her health to be, quote, as good as my own. Later, though, Fryer found out that Flynn wasn't even a medical doctor. He was an industrial toxicologist on contract with U.S. Radium. So it became pretty clear that almost from the get-go, U.S. Radium had been acting shady about covering up the effects of the element.
Yeah, and we should say that although Flynn wasn't a doctor, I mean, as you pointed out earlier, it took a long time for doctors to kind of, you mentioned catching on to the fact that these women had had radium poisoning.
Yeah, their teeth falling out had something to do with it.
Right, but I think part of it was also that they didn't want to, radium had so much promise, they didn't want to admit that maybe this wonder element that they had found also had some negative effects because they were afraid it would keep people from accepting the positive effects that radium could have in medicine.
Just give it a bad name, essentially.
Right. So Fryer did decide to sue U.S. Radium in 1925, but it took her 2 years to find an attorney who was willing to take her case. On May 18th, 1927, though, Raymond Barry, who was a young Newark attorney, took the case on contingency and filed a lawsuit in a New Jersey court on her behalf. And pretty much right away, four other women with severe medical problems joined the lawsuit. Their names were Edma Hussman, Catherine Shobe, and two sisters also, Quinta McDonald and Albina Larice. And as the case started to grow into a huge media sensation, the press in the U.S. and Europe soon dubbed the five women the Radium Girls. So that's where the name comes from.
So the Radium Girls were looking for $250,000 in compensation for medical expenses and pain for each of them. But first, there was this legal obstacle in New Jersey's law that they had to get by. It was a 2-year statute of limitations. But the lawyer, Raymond Barry, argued that the statute applied from the moment the women learned about the source of their problems, not from the date they quit working for the factory, since, as we've discussed, that took quite some time. He also said that U.S. Radium's campaign of misinformation was the reason the women weren't informed in the first place and the reason why they didn't take legal action within the statute of limitations. So maybe Radium's fake doctor sort of complicated matters here.
Definitely. While this was going on, though, medical examiners kept looking into the situation. Medical examiners from New Jersey and New York, they investigated the suspicious deaths of the plant workers, and in the process, a deceased sister of two of the Radium Girls, McDonald and Larice, was exhumed on October 16, 1927. Her name was Amelia Maggia, and she had also worked at the plant, and her bones were found to be highly radioactive. Her former dentist had tipped them off on it. He actually had removed part of her jaw soon before she died because it had deteriorated to that point, and he kind of suspected that radium poisoning might be part of the issue, radiation poisoning, and so they exhumed the body and found that he was correct.
Yeah, so these investigations, the exhumation and all of that, and the legal maneuverings took up quite a bit of time, obviously. And in fact, it took up so much time that the first hearing didn't take place until January 11th, 1928. And by that point, the women's health had really deteriorated. Some of them couldn't even raise their arms to take the oath. The two sisters we mentioned were bedridden. Grace Fryer had lost all of her teeth and couldn't sit up without using a back brace. Definitely couldn't walk. But the severity of their conditions really affected people in the courtroom when they did testify, when those who were able did testify. People in the courtroom were said to have wept when they watched them.
Yeah, just an example of one of their testimonies. Edna Hussman's testimony included details about her financial troubles, which were caused by the medical bills that she had. And she said, quote, "I cannot even keep my little house, our bungalow. I know I will not live much longer, for now I cannot sleep at night for the pains." So, of course, everyone was fascinated with the story, and it was everywhere. Even Marie Curie heard about it, and she was really surprised to learn how the factory workers had been handling radium on the job. Referring to the radium girls, she said, quote, "I see no hope for them. My experiments with radium convince me that if the poison is taken internally, it is practically impossible to destroy it." So, you know, just an aside here, many of you may know this, but Curie herself died in 1934 of complications resulting from long-term radium exposure also.
But even then, with Curie saying that she saw no hope for them, with the radium girls visibly deteriorating and public sympathy pouring in, U.S. Radium didn't hesitate to try to still delay the legal proceedings as much as they possibly could. So after a hearing in April, the judge granted the defense a 5-month adjournment. And Barry tried to remind the judge that the women might not last those 5 months, not survive until September. And he even found lawyers with cases that were going to be tried in less than a month who were willing to switch dates with him. But U.S. Radium absolutely refused, said that their witnesses were not going to be ready. They weren't going to be available until that 5-month window was up.
Yeah. So what ended ultimately helping them move the trial up was the power of the press, in particular Walter Lippmann of the New York World. And he helped kind of speed things along. The New York World was a really influential paper at the time, and Lippmann had written a number of editorials about the radium girls. One he wrote on May 10th, 1928 was particularly scathing. He called the delay a, quote, "damnable travesty of justice," and said that if ever a case called for prompt adjudication, it is the case of 5 crippled women who are fighting for a few miserable dollars to ease their last days on earth.
I'm Tracy V. Wilson from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Did you know small businesses make up 99.9% of all businesses in the United States? The world is powered by entrepreneurs, and if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks. And every episode, hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres talk to entrepreneurs about how they've grown from the lessons of launching and nurturing a small business, and how they have found success being their own boss. From the excitement of first starting out to finding the right tools and resources to process invoices and payments like QuickBooks Money, you won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks.
Planning your next trip? Choice Hotels has a stay for any traveler you want to be, with 22 brands and over 7,400 locations. Whether you're a business traveler, a family road tripper, someone who wants to seek out history and maybe make your own, or just planning a quick getaway, Choice Hotels has a stay for any you. Like a Cambria Hotel, where you can be a cocktail connoisseur and sip locally inspired craft beverages at downtown locations in the center of it all. This is a fun way to visit cities with a lot of history and a lot of fun in mind. Or a Radisson Hotel, for all our productivity powerhouses out there. With flexible workspaces and on-site restaurants, you'll get the most out of your work trip. You'll get the coffee, the Wi-Fi, and the work done. And we can't forget about comfort hotels. Imagine you're a family road tripper, waking up in your big spacious room and then heading down to a free hot breakfast for the entire family, including waffles. So you'll be well-fed and ready for the day's adventure, even if that's just relaxing. After that, you're spending all afternoon relaxing by the pool. You deserve it. What are you waiting for? Join Choice Privileges and start earning points toward your next stay. Find a stay for any you. Book directly at choicehotels.com, where travels come true. If you use paper, you're a human. But if you choose paper, you're a papertarian, someone who lives a paper-based lifestyle because it has a positive impact on the planet. And also because it's the easiest choice you'll make all day, seriously. It's as easy as reaching for boxed instead of bottled water. It's as easy as opting for beauty products that come in paper packaging. It's as easy as grabbing eggs in a cardboard container. And that's all in one trip to the grocery store, which, if everyone's being honest, you were planning to go to anyway. But paper isn't just an easy choice. Papertarians know that it's the smart choice, too. Because paper comes from trees, a renewable and sustainably managed resource, and paper products are designed to be recycled. In fact, when you choose products that come in paper-based packaging, those fibers can go on to be recycled up to 7 times. So why wouldn't you go Papertarian? Learn more at howlifeunfolds.com/Papertarian.
Me. Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this, I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter, that's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered for just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black, directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R, under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
And those editorials, combined with the public outrage they caused and the efforts of Barry and others, all together helped convince the New Jersey court system to change the trial date to early June 1928. But just days before the trial, the Radium girls ended up settling out of court. They got $10,000 each, coverage of their medical expenses, and a $600 annuity until death. So much less than they were hoping for in the end.
Yeah, but at least it was something before they passed away, because some of them did start dying from their condition pretty quickly after that. McDonald died in 1929 at age 34. Fryer died at age 34. And Schaub died at age 30 in 1933. And Hussman died in 1939 at age 37. One lived for quite some time after it. Larice, she died in 1946 at age 51. But it's a really sad story any way you look at it. But there is a silver lining. The reason why we're covering this for Labor Day, they did make some strides for workers. Industry safety standards were enhanced, and the Radium Girls set a precedent in case law for the right of individual workers to sue their employers for damages caused by labor abuse.
And of course, it made people aware of the dangers of radium. New tolerance levels were set for workers and for researchers. And as for some of the products that we talked about earlier, the FTC issued a cease and desist order against the manufacturer of the product Radithor in 1931.
That tonic you would chug, liquid sunshine.
Exactly, that magical elixir. And they found that it contained enough radium to kill the people who drank it regularly. And, of course, the Radium Girls are not forgotten. There have been poems, books, and plays written about them. And now there's that memorial, too, that we mentioned earlier in Illinois. So
we're speaking from the past, but maybe after this Labor Day weekend, we will go check out photos of the unveiling of the memorial and hope that something like this does get a little press for Labor Day weekend.
Yes, but we're not quite finished with labor-related topics. We have done a few this year, and one that kind of touched on some of those things, the Leo Frank trial episode, we received a lot of mail on. So we want to share some of that with you in our listener mail segment now. So one of the things we asked of our listeners after the Leo Frank trial episode is, first of all, if they had heard of Leo Frank, and if so, then how they learned about him. Did they learn about Leo Frank in history class? Because Sarah had, and I hadn't, and she grew up in Georgia, and I had not. So we wondered if it was a just totally Georgia-specific story. And we got back some interesting responses. We got back a lot of responses, and most people, I think, especially people who weren't from Georgia, said that they had never heard of Leo Frank before, or they hadn't learned about him in class. A few people had heard about him.
Quite a few people.
But they heard about him from kind of a surprising source, and this letter from Grace that I have here kind of indicates that, or tells us a little bit more about that. She says, "Hey guys, I just listened to the podcast on Leo Frank, and the whole time I wanted to burst out into song. Why? Because our school recently did a production of Parade. It's a musical about the trial of Leo Frank. Like you said in the podcast, a lot of historians think that Leo was innocent, and that was the stance the play took, too. If you ever get a chance to see it, it's a great production written by Jason Robert Brown. Also, I'm from Melbourne, Australia, and if I hadn't done Parade or listened to this podcast, it is very unlikely that I would have found out about such an interesting piece of Georgian history."
So we also got some mail about another artistic interpretation of the Leo Frank story. This one is from Marika, and she wrote, "Hey, ladies, I knew about Mary Fagan and Leo Frank, but not from history class. I learned about the case because I am a Lana Turner fan. The movie They Won't Forget is considered to be one of the best films of the 1930s and is based on the Leo Frank case. Lana Turner plays Mary Clay, the murdered girl, and it was her very first film appearance. Claude Rains and Edward Norris also star." So how about that? A Lana Turner movie and a musical.
Yeah, so just like the Radium Girls that we just talked about, they have some
dramatic interpretations.
Absolutely. So those were some positive responses that we got from people, or some neutral responses. We also got a few critical responses of the episode, and we wanted to share one of those, too, that brought up some interesting points and kind of respond to that a little bit and just put it out there for you guys to think about. This is from John in Florida, and he says, "I found the podcast on Leo Frank to be disturbing on a few levels. I get that this is about a miscarriage of justice, but I don't get the Jewish aspect. People are subject to prejudice every day all over the world. Once you add the element of a victim's religion, you separate them from the fabric of society, and it becomes more about the prejudice than the injustice. You could not have worked any harder of painting a wonderful picture of Leo Frank. In reality, he was engaged in child labor. To say he was using children and women for light duty sounds like it is from a PR firm for the Frank family. How about Mary? What were her working conditions? We did hear a lot about Frank's degrees and his work as a leader in the industry. Why did Mary have to get her check from Frank? Do you have to get your check from the founder of How Stuff Works? I found this to be a one-sided and very cold report. I felt no compassion for Mary, and I felt I was being told to feel compassion for Frank. Sorry, but in the real world, I do not trust people who hire women and children to save a few cents. When we see this now, we bring it to the media's attention and boycott the products. Why is Mr. Frank excused from this kind of inspection? Because it happened 100 years ago? Exploitation of workers is exploitation of workers. Mary was exploited as a worker. Why was she not safe in her own workplace? What was the effect of the death on her family? Was there prejudice because she was Irish? We did hear about Frank's final request. As we get away from child labor, we forget the injustice and the abuses forced on workers. It took the federal government to step in and stop people like Frank from exploiting children. Do you really think he had Mary's interest and safety at heart? I love your podcast on history. Please don't let it become revisionist history. Thank you." All right. So obviously there's a lot to address in this letter, right?
Definitely.
Yeah. I mean, first we wanted to start out by saying that the podcast, as the title indicates, was to focus on the Leo Frank trial. And as John mentioned, it was mostly about the miscarriage of justice there. And so that's why I think Leo Frank got more of the focus in the podcast.
And the murder itself is so horrific and unequivocally wrong. That kind of speaks for itself in a way.
Yeah. I mean, and I think because Mary was so young and she was the murder victim, and because of the press that the trial has gotten, we really don't know that much about her. We know that she was 13, that she was young, that she was beautiful, that she was a sweet girl, she went to church, that she was Catholic. I mean, we know all these things about her, that she worked in the factory putting the little erasers in the metal casings at the end of the pencil. That's what she did. But we don't really know that much more to answer John's questions.
Well, and consequently, her story and her role in history, and not just the way we've presented it, but the way it is presented, is as the murder victim. And that's terrible. That's part of the injustice of her life, that that's all she got to be.
Yeah, and that's one reason that we pointed out exactly how much money she made. You know, we talked about her collecting $1.25 that week, and it was our intention by doing that to point out how very little she died for and how tragic her life was and her death. But beyond that, the podcast did move into more of a discussion of the trial and of Leo Frank. And as we indicated at the end of that episode, most sources do kind of assume that he was not guilty of her murder. And so maybe that is why that side of the story came through more. But we did try to emphasize at the end, when we mentioned that he had received the posthumous pardon, that this, a lot of people have said that this doesn't mean that he is exonerated for the crime. Nobody really knows what happened.
Yeah,
no one knows what happened to Mary Fagan, and you know, maybe someday we'll have more information, maybe not. But at this point, we can only give you as much information that we have. And we can say that we always try to give you a balanced story. And that's always our goal. But maybe it doesn't always turn out that way. Maybe sometimes it's a little more emphasis on one person than another character in a story that we're telling. And, you know, we apologize for that. We always hope that we can tell something that's a balanced story. But thank you, John, for that email. We always love to get really honest responses from our listeners and hear what you guys are thinking. And hope you know that they're kindly put, like John. Yeah, this
too.
One was really kindly put, and it was really thoughtful, and we appreciated it. And, you know, please send us more of those. We do read them. So I hope this shows you guys that. But we are at historypodcast@howstuffworks.com. If you want to send us anything else about this or any other podcasts or react to any of the listener mails or tell us more about Leo Frank or U.S. Radium or the Radium Girls, anything, please write us. You can also look us up on Facebook. You can like us there, if you actually like us, that is. And you can look us up on Twitter at Mistin History.
And if you want to learn a little bit more about radium and radiation, we do have an article called How Nuclear Radiation Works, and you can find it by searching for nuclear radiation at www.howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
The wait is almost over. Get ready for the 2024 NFL season as the full schedule is announced. Bring it on. Every rivalry, every rematch, every rookie debut, every game revealed. The 2024 NFL schedule release, presented by Verizon, coming in May. Live on NFL Network, ESPN2, and streaming on NFL Plus. Terms and conditions apply to NFL Plus. Visit NFL.com/schedule release to learn more.
Good sleep should come naturally, and with the new Natural Hybrid mattress, it can. A collaboration between Lisa and West Elm, the Natural Hybrid is expertly crafted from natural latex, natural wool, and certified safe foams to elevate your sleep sanctuary and support a greener tomorrow. Plus, every purchase helps fuel Lisa's work with shelters and those in need. Don't put off a good night's sleep any longer. Get a Lisa mattress today for a sound sleep tonight. Visit Lisa.com/iHeart. That's LEESA.com/iHeart.